I'm Sybil McGuire for Around the Triangle, and on the phone with us today is David B. Goldstein. He's worked on energy efficiency and energy policy since the 70s. Dr. Goldstein's been instrumental in the development of energy efficiency standards for new buildings and appliances currently in effect at the regional and national level in the United States, Russia, Kazakhstan, and China. And got a PhD in physics from the University of California at Berkeley, is a fellow of the American Physical Society and the recipient of its Leo, Szilard Award for Physics in the Public Interest. And you have a MacArthur Fellowship. You had a MacArthur Fellowship, received one in 2002, and the California Alumni Association's 2003 Award for Excellence in Achievement. And the book we're talking about is Invisible Energy, Strategies to Rescue the Economy and Save the Planet. My, that seems like a large task, David.
Well, there's a large resource available to do it, the invisible resource of energy efficiency. And really what I'm talking about is how to pay more attention to it so that we can capture these economic benefits.
And improved efficiencies will promote greater economic growth.
Yeah, and that's kind of a no-brainer, because if you can invest a dollar in energy efficiency and get $3 back in lower energy costs over the life of the product, that's big savings. But what is a more sophisticated benefit of energy efficiency is that it addresses all of the major causes of the Great Recession. Economists, both from the right wing, the left wing, and the center, pretty much agree on what got us into this recession. And in all cases, bad energy efficiency policy, or weak policy, or lack of it, was a major contributing factor to each of those problems.
Give us some obvious examples of that, because, wow, really?
Well, yeah. Let's start with the risk of inflation. Mm-hmm. Inflation has been a concern for the last 30 years. And what we notice is that inflation is only a problem when energy prices are going up. Inflation was a big problem in the 1973-4 era when we had the first oil shock. It was again a problem when we had the second oil shock in 1979. We haven't had as severe inflation up till then, but whenever we start seeing oil prices at $80, $100, $150 in a barrel, we start seeing inflation takes off, the Fed raises interest rates to fight inflation, and that kind of destroys economic growth.
Mm-hmm. And not just nationally, globally.
That's right. Second big problem, the trade deficit. America spends more on imports than we're able to export, and that means that foreigners are getting a bigger and bigger control of our economy. Obviously not a good thing. And also, when we're buying stuff abroad, the jobs in producing it are jobs abroad, not at home. Energy was 38% of the trade deficit in 2007 and has been a big fraction of it for the last 40 years. So if you can reduce energy use through efficiency, you're reducing imports of energy from foreign countries, many of which support terrorism. And you're also, by reducing the demand, you're decreasing the price of energy and you're eliminating a major cause of inflation.
Supply and demand is very easy to understand. Apparently, according to your book, we could reduce U.S. energy use 30% over the next 20 years?
It's actually way better than that, Sybil. Studies by the National Academy of Sciences and the consulting firm McKinsey Associates, as well as the American Physical Society, all say that we can save 30% of the energy we would otherwise use through new efficiency policies, and that 30% is going to save us $500 billion a year in direct savings to consumers, and it will depress energy prices enough to save us another $500 billion a year. But it's actually way better than that, because all of these studies, and they'll say this themselves, are very cautious. They're basically asking how far can we go with 2008 technologies applied in 2030. And so if you start looking at how the technologies for energy efficiency could improve if we make markets really work in efficiency, you'd get savings that are two or three or four times as big.
Good grief. What are the top tips now? Apparently, this is addressed. The top tips that can save both energy and money now.
Well, this is actually a harder question than you might think, Sybil, because if we live in a mass market society, so if I go out and try to do something on my own, I'm going to find it's hard to find the supplies I need. It's going to be hard to find contractors who I can rely on to do the work. So, you know, you could go out and get your home fixed up for energy efficiency, and you can save typically a third, even a half of your energy bills with investments that will cost you less every month if you finance them than the savings in your utility bill. And if you're a business owner, you can go out and fix your commercial building and reduce energy use again by 30%, 40%, or 50%. The problem is, since it is so uncommon for people to do that, it actually is difficult to find contractors who can do that, or even to find objective advice. For a homeowner, there actually is one source of objective advice. You can get a home energy rating, which can be obtained through a website called ResNet, ResNet.us. And ResNet is a nonprofit who is in the process of developing a certified contractor program that can help you get a contractor who's reliable. What's important, though, is that if we can develop policies at the state level that encourage energy efficiency to happen, then it's going to make it a lot easier for consumers and for businesses who want to be green, not necessarily because they support the environment, but because they want to make more money doing it. And then the system becomes much more self-sustaining.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of the solutions are basic, and people know about insulating better. I know I need to replace the kerf around my doors, and that's something I can do myself because there are a couple places where it's a little worn, and so I'm sure that I've got a little drafting there, either heat in the summer or cold in the winter. Better windows, Energy Star appliances, LED or CFL lighting, and most of my light bulbs now in my house are CFL, compact fluorescent lights, and I'm thrilled at how long they last. That's wonderful. I feel like I hardly ever change light bulbs anymore. But
I'm still running some CFLs that I bought in 1999 and use every day for 3-4 hours.
I know. Isn't it amazing? Now, you say that your energy bill for your condo in San Fran is now 85% less than the national average?
That's right. We're averaging about 130 kilowatt hours a month from doing pretty much the kinds of things that you've just been talking about.
And what we're also trying to promote is people making these changes and making it possible for them to benefit not only financially each month when they get their bill, but perhaps government incentives?
That's right. Well, the first government incentives, a lot of this is just government getting out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
A number of localities and states have proposed a wonderful way to finance serious retrofits for your home. So, for example, suppose you wanted to invest $5,000 in fixing up your home. $5,000 sounds like a lot, but over the 30-year life of a mortgage, the average home is going to spend $75,000 in utility bills. So if you could cut those by a third, you're saving $25,000. Doing that for $5,000 is a pretty good deal. But wait, maybe you plan to move out after 3 years. So you could borrow the money, but then you'd have to pay it back before you got all of the savings from energy efficiency. Well, the creative new approach is to allow the local governments to put the loan payments as a property tax that goes with the parcel. So if you sell it, if you sell the house, the next owner who's getting the benefits of lower utility bills is the one that's paying for the retrofit. And the problem is that the federal government, in the form of Fannie Mae, which is now government-controlled, is saying it's not going to allow any kind of loan like that if it holds the first mortgage. And this is a crazy policy because you'd think that Fannie Mae would be worried about whether people can repay their mortgages, because a lot of folks can't.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think they would realize that if your utility bills are a lot lower, it's going to be easier to repay your mortgage, not more difficult.
Now, if people want to reduce household energy consumption and costs, they can go to the website nrdc.org/air/energy/genergy.asp. What can they do if they want to bring the attention of their representatives to this issue and they want these things addressed?
Well, I think, for one, they can look at the NRDC website for ways of working with our organization, but simply telling your elected representatives that you would like to see mortgage lending encourage energy efficiency. I didn't get to this before, but I mentioned that energy bills over the life of a mortgage are $75,000. If you include the cost of driving to and from the home, if the home is built in suburban sprawl without transit and where the homes are not within walking distance of anything, the cost of driving to and from the home is $300,000.
Oh, my.
So if the bank is looking at how can you make, you know, is this loan affordable? Can the consumer afford to pay back the loan? They're looking at the ability to pay back the $200,000 median price of a home, and they're forgetting that there are obligations of $375,000 that are probably going to be first in line before people pay their loan. And we're actually seeing that the defaults on mortgages are concentrated in the areas that entail the most driving expenses.
So simply
fixing this problem is going to enable developers who want to build in smart growth locations to be able to get their projects financed. It'll allow consumers who prefer to live in more compact neighborhoods the ability to buy a house that's more affordable, and it will stop the bleeding that we're having from home defaults, from home mortgage defaults.
So where we really should be starting is in our planning, the planning of our cities and our communities.
That's right. There's a lot we can do on the local level, which, again, is a win-win. It's a pro-business choice and a pro-environment choice. The kind of compact development that can cut driving in half violates zoning laws in most parts of the country. So here you have something consumers want to buy it, developers want to build it, and obsolete zoning laws are keeping this kind of environmentally friendly economic development from happening.
We're speaking with Dr. David B. Goldstein. He's the author of Invisible Energy, Strategies to Rescue the Economy and Save the Planet. And you're also the co-director for the Natural Resources Defense Council. Their website is, I just had it, nrdc.org. And you can get lots of information about how you can just save energy in your very own home by just a few steps that we should all know about by now. Could energy efficiency really make much of a difference? Our current president touted it as a part of a plan to end the U.S. addiction to fossil fuels, and this book will help explain why. We can't go to hardwares or home improvement stores and buy a product called efficiency, but we can buy various products to help us be more efficient. Are there any other tips that you would like to give our listening audience, David?
Well, I think it's important to keep efficiency in mind, because if you're going to buy a product like a refrigerator or an air conditioner, then this is where the big savings can be made. You're only going to do it once every 15 or 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
In other cases, you've got to plan in advance, because if your water heater breaks, what your first question is going to be is, when can you have it fixed? It's not going to be, is this Energy Star qualifying, and if I spent $100 more, could I save $1,000 in utility bills? What you can do, however, is plan those things in advance. If you have an older water heater or an old furnace or air conditioner, you can start looking into what can you do next to replace it. What kind of product do you want? Where can I get it? Who's going to have it on one day notice if my old one breaks down? The other thing is in the policy arena. North Carolina is working on a very strong building code to assure that new homes are energy efficient. And this could be a huge part of the energy savings in your state. But how many consumers know about how much money they could save if they're in the market for a new home if this code is adopted and enforced? So this is an area where citizen knowledge and participation in the democratic process is going to help them unleash the power of efficiency to pull us out of the recession.
And will they find more information about that on the nrdc.org website?
Yes, and a lot of the issues that I'm talking about are available on that website in digestible form if you look under blogs and look up my name.
Okay.
David B. Goldstein.
That's terrific. And not only does this help save the planet and cut back on our dependence on foreign sources of energy, and we're not even talking about alternate sources of energy right now. We're just talking about being efficient, are we not?
That's right. Everything that I'm talking about is in addition to what we can do with clean energy on the supply side. What I'm suggesting is that as we unleash the forces of the market to compete for better and newer efficiency technologies, we could reduce the nation's energy consumption by a third to two-thirds from where it is now, even though the economy is going to grow, and or hopefully is going to grow, and we're going to have a lot more population. Still, we can do this with a third or perhaps two-thirds of the energy we're using right now. That makes the job of clean energy a lot easier to do because there just isn't that much dirty energy to replace anymore.
And how do we change the weak policies on energy efficiency?
Well, it's a number of things, and that's why you need a book to explain it. But it involves creating incentives for businesses to sell and improve their energy efficiency technologies continuously.
For example, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You see what continuous improvement can do in areas like computers and the internet, mm-hmm. where people can directly see the benefits of a faster computer or a better internet, faster internet connection. And if we can get the same level of market awareness of energy efficiency, I'm sure we can see undreamed of technologies in efficiency that are going to save even more and produce even more benefits like comfort and convenience than we have now. I'm confident of that because in the few areas where we've really tried on efficiency policy, we've been able to get continuous improvement for more than a generation.
And you say 30% is modest, and it's something that's doable and easy. Just paying attention to our usage, like not buying an enormous refrigerator freezer combo if you don't need one.
Well, actually, Sybil, that's more an issue of conservation,
mm-hmm.
Which means maybe we don't need so much, and that mm-hmm. would offer additional savings. But I'm really talking about efficiency, which means getting the same or better level of energy services
out of what we do have.
Simply paying attention to buying the best value over the life of the product.
Okay. How can we help do things like capping greenhouse gas emissions? I know you address this. The book is Invisible Energy, Strategies to Rescue the Economy and Save the Planet. And we're talking with author David B. Goldstein today. Tell us a little bit more about things that we can do as individual consumers as far as thinking about how we can be more energy efficient as individuals.
The most important thing is to look at the long-term investments that you have, particularly your home and your car, and to figure out, is it possible to buy choices that will perhaps cost a little more, but will be good investments and will save back the costs several-fold over the life of the product. This takes some planning because I'm sure not everyone could afford $3,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 to make their home more energy efficient. But if you plan it in advance and you say, all right, how can I arrange financing? How can I see if there are incentives from my utility or perhaps my state or the federal government that might help me with this? What exactly do I have to do? How big is the scope of the project? Who can get it done for me? And start thinking big
mm-hmm.
in terms of areas that can really save you a lot of money and increase your comfort and increase the resale value of your home. That's probably the best thing that consumers can be doing on their own.
We were having this discussion in the office earlier about, you know, if we do buy this electric car or that hybrid, the cost of that vehicle is twice what it is for our gas-powered vehicle, and we won't see a return ever, much less in a period of time that we'll have the vehicle. So we're all hoping for those prices to come down, and we're all hoping for resources to help us become more educated consumers, and one of those would be Invisible Energy. The book is Invisible Energy, Strategies to Rescue the Economy and Save the Planet, and a website people can check out is the website that You are co-director for the Natural Resources Defense Council. The website is nrdc.org. David, I want to thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Sybil.
I'm Sybil McGuire for Around the Triangle.